Welcome Danelle Miller to the stage. Come on. Hi, Danelle.
Good morning. All right, are you ready? Good morning.
Good morning.
How was that, Brian? Is that better? You still won? Oh, we had a bet. I told him, this crowd does not need me to come up here and say, I'm going to say good morning. You're going to say good morning back. What? No, that was fantastic. He's criticizing y'all. He thinks you can do better. Good morning.
Good morning.
I think it's about equal. I think I won the bet. You guys are ready for this. I like to win. I'm a little competitive, I'll be honest. I'm going to talk about my recent trip. I'm not going to give you a whole lot. I've got a frog in my throat, too. Excuse me. All right, I didn't have that first service. I'm probably more nervous in second service because now I've got to do it again. And I used to teach. And so, you know, you would do the lesson in the morning with the first group, and then you do it second period, and you have to do it fifth period and seventh period. And by the end, you're like, have I said this? Maybe I should just skim over some of this. So now my mind is racing. I feel like I'm giving you a geometry lesson again, and I got to keep all the details going. Thank you very much. I'll take that. Thanks. So yeah, I took a trip, and it's not a surprise to you because you all were fantastic. When you found out that I was taking a trip, my Sunday school class that I go to, first service, blessed me with prayer. They blessed me financially supporting the trip. You all prayed for me in the services. Some of you wrote notes to me, and I took those notes with me on the trip, and I was blessed throughout my trip. Daily, I had something to open and knew that people were here and praying for me. So thank you so much for supporting this trip. It was a 10-day journey, and this was not something that I'm used to doing. This is new for me. This is not my usual, I have a sense of adventure and I love meeting new people outside my comfort zone kind of thing. This is me really getting outside myself and trying to learn something new. I was invited to go to Colombia, and I really thought and prayed hard about it, decided, yes, I'm going to go. And then I looked it up on the map. Geometry, yes. Geography, no. And so this is where Colombia is. It always surprises me that the west side of South America is actually on the same line as our east coast of North America. And so Colombia is directly south of Washington, D.C., same time zone and everything. So I didn't have a lot of jet lag or anything like that to have to get used to. It was a fairly quick trip down there. And we landed in Bogota that first day. And then our goal was to go and see. And the Guajaro Foundation was already there. They've been there for a number of years now. Not like forever, but like, you know, 4 or 5 years, this foundation has existed. And they have already made a lot of connections around the country. And they wanted us to come and see what they are doing and how they come alongside other people groups and other ministries and help them in any way they can. But they want to do life with them all over the country. And so they wanted us to see what we could see in this little short 10-day period. So that's kind of my itinerary for 10 days. We jumped around the country quite a bit. Now, it's the size of 2 Texases about, okay? So that's about how much land you're looking at there. But Bogota's right in the middle. That is an altitude of about 8,600 feet, something like that. So it's up there. It's in the mountains. 12 million-ish people. When you look up the population of Bogota, you're going to get like Bogota proper and then like all the outlying, you know, places. And so there's a lot of people in that region, and it depends on how you want to count the population. So somewhere around 12 million people, a little bit more than I'm used to from, you know, my town of 3,000 that I grew up in. And we spent a couple days there. We jumped around the country. We did a fly on from number 1 to number 2 on that map and then a drive to number 3. That little part of the trip is what I want to focus on because I could talk all day. I mean, it was 10 days worth of information that I took in, right? So they're giving me 25 to 30 minutes here. I'm going to focus on 2 and 3 so that you don't have to be here all afternoon listening to me talk. That was where the most impressionable things happened. You know, those are the ones that pressed into my heart. Those are the ones, that region is where I can still tell you the names of people and see their faces in my mind. The other places we met people, we couldn't stay as long, we couldn't meet as many people, we couldn't have the experiences, but 2 and 3, that's the meat of my trip. Let me talk just a minute about the Wajaro Foundation and who went on this trip. You met Travis Bodden and Lance Finley on Eddie's last day. They both came to thank him for his ministry and wish him a great retirement. Lance is our national director for the Churches of God General Conference. Travis is the regional Midwest Region Conference director. And there's an ad council for our region, which is Iowa churches, Illinois churches, and you guys, Indiana churches, right? So those 3 states compose our region, and I'm on the ad council. I'm the clerk. And so we started talking about when can we take a trip and how can we learn and where can we go. And Leslie's the president. She's the one waving at the back of that picture. And she has connections to the couple in Columbia that we went to see. Annie represents our churches in Iowa, and so we had all 3 states and our national director on this trip represented. So that was pretty cool to have that team assembled. I knew everyone except for Annie, and I got blessed by, she's 22, and you talk about just a blessing to be around. So even just the people I went with, you know, I learned from, and I was blessed with being on a team with this group. The group down there, the Wajaro Foundation, Wajaro is not a Spanish word, it is an indigenous people word from Colombia. I'm not sure which people group it came from, but it is the idea of going together, to come alongside someone. It's not a mission trip to necessarily do a project. They have projects and they help and they come alongside, but it's not like we're going to go do a project and we're going to leave. It's a project in a series of relationship challenges and, you know, blessings is what it is. It's a long-term relationship that they are shooting for. So this is Lauren on the left. She is the wife of Jake that's on the left-hand corner of the other picture. That's at their house last night. They welcomed us with their 4 kids around the table. And that was our last meal together before we headed out. Jake and Lauren have been down there for 7 years. They're raising their kids in Columbia. He is from Columbia. She is from the United States. I believe they met in college and decided that this ministry was something that they really needed to be a part of. They started with a different group, and then they started the Wajaro Foundation. Laura is sitting next to Lauren in that picture, and Laura is a spitfire. She stands about this tall. She can carry at least 3 times the amount of weight I can and hike up all the hills without losing her breath. She's impressive. And she can translate like no other. She is the detail person. She's the projects manager for their team. And so she handled, man, I put a lot of trust in her. I would go down and visit anywhere in Colombia with her because she can handle a situation. Wajaro is this idea of coming along, and they want the groups that come and visit them to have an Emmaus walk kind of journey. So Emmaus walk in the Bible, you know, Jesus has been crucified and not everyone has seen him yet, but we have a couple disciples that are making this journey on the Emmaus road, and Jesus, unbeknownst to them, they don't recognize him, comes up alongside and journeys with them. And they don't know who he is until later they are eating together. He breaks some bread and they're like, it's Jesus. And they think after he leaves, you know, that was amazing. Didn't our hearts burn from within as he talked to us on the road? And that's the kind of journey she wanted us to go on with her. This idea of going and seeing and coming alongside people and hearing Christ speak to you and your hearts burn with new knowledge and burn with desire and burn with ideas and vision and love and all of those wonderful things. It's an experience. And it's hard to talk about. It's hard to go somewhere and then come back and try to explain that to someone of all of these different events that made my heart burn from within. And so I've been processing those moments. You know, they didn't want me to come and speak immediately following because I always say my head kind of explodes and it takes a while for all the pieces to come back in together. And so I need to, you know, reorganize. And I'm still processing. Man, there was so much goodness on this trip. And so Brian and I use the 3DM materials. It's a discipleship program. Mike Breen has created shapes to help you have conversations and to grow in Christ. And one of those things is called the learning circle. And this idea that when you are in a moment, sometimes those moments are bigger than others, right? Sometimes you hear something and you're like, huh, like that sits different with me. There's a burning in my heart. There's something different going on. And the Kairos circle, you see the red line on that graph. That's like, you know, chronological time. Tick, 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 tick. Time marches on left to right. But the Kairos circle is this idea that when you have this green X moment, boom, something fuller is happening there. I hear something. Maybe God is speaking to me, but there's a tug at my heart. There's something going on there. There's this time that you can actually go back and think about that moment. And instead of just time marching on, you stop for a second and you do kind of a loop-de-loop. And there's a process there. And the shortcut process is basically asking two questions. What is God saying to me in this moment? And more importantly, what am I going to do about it? And as you come out of that circle, if you have decided to change something, if you have decided to grow, if you've decided to move towards God in that moment, you come out, and it's not like you're just tick, 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 marching on, but you kind of take on a new trajectory, right? You're pointed more towards God. And in that moment, you see growth, you see discipleship, you see moments that make a difference in your life and the path that you are on. And so that's the Emmaus moment, that moment when they were like, gosh, we walked with Jesus. We knew something was up. We just hadn't explored that yet. I had moments like that where things just stood out to me, things that were said, things that were done, and I'm still processing those things. I'm still asking these two questions, and they're hard questions to answer. So as I'm talking, know that I don't have all the answers, but I'm going to share with you some of my thinking for sure. So let's talk about the trip a little bit. Remember, I'm looking at 2 and 3 here. So we landed from Bogota to number 2. It's a town, good-sized town of Cali, had a big airport. We land there. It's kind of in a valley. And then we got into a van. There were 7 of us on the journey because 5 from our team. Lauren and Laura went with us. And then 2 men picked us up in their van. So there's 9 of us in this van, right? And you can see on that left side, that guy in front of me, that's my leg sitting there as I'm sitting in the very back of a van. That was way too hot to begin with because Kali is low and it was a little steamy in there. And the guy in front of me is on this little box, right? And so our travel was crazy. We traveled all kinds of ways. This was just one of our crazy modes of transportation. No air conditioning or anything. All the windows open, wind blowing, kind of craziness. We journey 2.5 hours across the plain. We journey another 30 minutes up into the mountains. My joke is that everyone was really glad that Danelle didn't have to be in that van any longer by the time we got to our destination because it was a twisted, bumpy ride by the end of it in the back of that van. So we're in this van, we're packed in, and it's just this feeling of adventure. You know, you're just taking it all in. It's our first real trip anywhere outside of walking around Bogota proper. We go to an Airbnb that night, we rest as much as we can, we get up, and this blue utility Jeep kind of vehicle shows up to take us up into the mountains even further. We sat in the back of it, and on these really kind of hard benches, all of our luggage packed around us on our feet and everything, and we're journeying up this dirt road. Right outside the little town we were in, it just turned to a red dirt road kind of thing, and we're going up. And the guy who's driving says, I want you to know that you have been invited into this territory, that we have announced your presence. We have told the Misak Council that you are coming. They know that you are coming, and they welcome you. And our interpreter says that and says, you can't get past this point. Don't miss this. You can't get past this point without a Misak friend taking you there. And I just thought that was a beautiful moment, this idea that I'm a friend of people I've never met. I mean, sure, it's Lauren. She's got the relationship and everything, right? But they've accepted us. They are bringing us in to this very special area that is theirs, and they're welcoming us with open arms. And it was just one of those moments where that just really spoke to my heart. That was so warming. They bring us into the community. And we pull up to this little house. This little house is a brand new house. It's a little visitor house that a couple has built. It's got three tiny little bedrooms, and it's got a kitchen. That's the whole main building. The little building at the back of that, that's just kind of off the corner, that's where the water for the building is. So that's your toilet, and you can see that in the little picture with the nice tarp in front of it, right? And then you've got your shower stall, and then you've got a sink. So in the morning, you know, we're all taking turns out there, and we're trying to brush our teeth while someone's showering. I don't know. You get to know your team members, that's for sure, on one of these trips. So we had a good night's sleep there. Found out that the blankets we were using were coming from all over the community. Poor gringos from, you know, North America. We were freezing in the mountains. It was cold at night, and they don't have heat. So all of these people had brought their blankets together and made sure that we were warm for the night. So hospitable. We sat down at the table, and you can see we've got Felipe and Alberto sitting at the table. That picture doesn't do justice to the number of people that were on the perimeters also welcoming us. Just a beautiful moment where every single person got a chance to say, hi, my name is, and they would tell us who they were in the community. They would give us a very formal welcome. They would call us brothers and sisters. It was just beautiful to be cramped in this little space with all these people who were just grinning from ear to ear to meet us. We were blessed just to be in their presence. And then one of the guys said, we want you to know that here in the Misak territory, we will protect you if anything would happen. Huh? Do we need protected? I kind of like deaf-eared it for a second. I was like, don't think about that too much, okay? But he went on to say, no matter what, people know you're here and you have the force of the entire Misak community at your disposal, basically. We would fight for you. We would protect you. You're safe. Now, on the last day of our trip, Lauren gave us some questions and took us to a botanical garden, and we had a journal, and we did a bunch of journaling, and we answered questions and such. And when we came out of that, we kind of shared. And Lance and Travis, this was their Kairos moment. Man, that stopped them in their tracks. They were just like, one, protectors. You know, what? Meaning protecting? What? But man, they mulled on that all week long, and just that beauty that they were able to say right off the bat, we love you guys and nothing's going to happen to you here. You're absolutely safe. We would fight for you. Kind of a beautiful moment in kind of a scary way. Colombia isn't safe everywhere. There are places that you don't go, and their territory is right on the edge of that. In fact, some of the Misak people themselves aren't the nicest. They're not really welcoming to Christians. There is a belief there that if you become a Christian, you are leaving your Misak history and culture behind. You can't be both in some people's eyes. So it's a little difficult, even in their own people. The people we were with came from a church of about 85 people. And they love who they are as Misak people, and they love who they are as followers of God, and they are working hard to make that something that other people can see as possible and good and very good. And so it's not easy for these folks to live as Christians even in their own community. After sitting down and having a drink, the hot drink is agua panela. Sugar water is what it is. It's like an unrefined sugar, and they boil that in water, and you just drink warm sugar water. They say it's very good for you. It's healthy. They encourage it. And then they have fry bread, which was really interesting, but it's fried bread, and they're like, here are two things that you should never eat. Have it. And it was a regular snack. I had 5 cups of agua panela in one day and 5 big pieces of fry bread in that day, because everybody who welcomes you to their house, this is a traditional welcome snack. So we're eating it there at the table. We get up, we walk, and we walk, and we walk, and we go and see what they're doing in their communities. One of the places that we stopped was Luis and Jenny's house. Got a picture of their house with all the flowers right there. Gorgeous. Up on a hill. Everything's up on a hill, by the way. You have to go up the hill to get to wherever you're going. And they welcomed us there with agua panela and fry bread. And we sat there and talked in their front yard for quite some time. And we just kept journeying around. The land is beautiful. We took so many pictures. You can see the valley there. There's a beautiful little brook that goes through the middle of it. They want to build close to water. Makes sense, right? Fresh water from the mountains. You can see down at the bottom, maybe it looks like a little black patch. Those are strawberries. So you could see these little patches of farm ground. There's strawberries, there's potatoes, there's onions, leafy greens like kale, beans, legumes, that kind of stuff. Lots of those. You'll see cows and sheep and chickens. Those are the main farm animals. But everybody, you know, it's kind of a little patchwork quilt as you look around. You'll see a little land. You'll see their little patchwork of their farmland and their animals out there. And so we're walking through and just scene after scene after scene of beauty as we are seeing their different projects. It's a beautiful, beautiful land. Now, Wajaro has several. They've been with the Misak people for a while. They have several different projects that they're working on. So one is the young people. They have a couple there that is just burning with passion for the 18 to 28-year-olds somewhere in there. And they have an entrepreneur group for them. And so there's their picture. You never saw Arlie without a smile on his face. That man knows how to smile all the time. He's got a building that they just did in October, November, put 500 chickens in there. You can see all the feeders and everything. Brought the young people in. They were running the business. The chickens were thriving until all of the feed prices skyrocketed recently, right? Everybody's prices have been going up, including theirs, and they could not sustain their program. They had to sell their chickens off, and they sold them for meat chickens is what ended up happening. But here's the thing. The smile doesn't go from his face. He's kind of going through. They've got the money saved up from selling their chickens, and they're figuring out what their next thing is. You know, they're always looking to the future. What did we learn from that? How can we make this better? How can we get something for these young people that will help them thrive? They just recently opened their first Misak bank, and they're teaching the young people how to save money and how to, you know, earn a check and handle money well so that they can raise a family and do well in their land. The ladies, my goodness, they make these bags that are just beautiful. And the sheep, they shear them, they dye them. Everywhere a woman goes, she is spinning wool. Like, Alejandra went with us, and she's 18 years old, maybe. She's doing university studies, and yet she's wearing the traditional clothing, and she's got her little ball of yarn, and she is stretching it and spinning it on a little spool. I wish I had a great picture of it, but it's just, it's mesmerizing watching her work. And she just walks around, and she's just spinning wool the whole time. So that the women can make these bags and sell them and make a living. Wajaro comes through then, buys a lot of bags, and then helps them with the distribution. That's one of the things that they do. They take them into the cities and sell them where these folks can't get to. And so that way they can, again, sustain their way of life. The young people have pottery, and they're learning crafting. The investigative team, which I thought was an interesting word for it, but they're investigating their culture. And how can we preserve that? Again, they love who they were. There are cave drawings, and they've taken those cave drawings, and they've changed them over into something that the women artisans can then weave into their bags, and the symbols are their heritage, and they love passing down that knowledge, and everything has meaning. Even their school is kind of built in this weird spiral. The spiral is a very important symbol of life to them, and so their school is built kind of in this spiral shape. It just has so much richness to it. And so that's what the investigative team is doing, is preserving that. So lots of people with passions for who they are and where they want to go and how they can better their people and their land. As they've grown, they just recently then, for the leaders, bought a building. This building is, the Wajaro Foundation did a 50-50 with them. You guys do 50%, we'll do 50% from our fundraising side. We'll get you a space so your leaders can work and meet and bring people in. And so this is the building. The next project is renovating it and adding space for visitors because this is a long-term relationship. They know that they're going to have people coming in, and they want space for them. And so I was joking that this is the shortest two-story building I've ever been in my life. Tall man's headache. Travis Bodden has a knot on his head from the doorway. And, you know, you just turn around and walk around here, right? You don't hit anything. Down there, be careful. Part of the joke was, you know, going from one floor to the next was this little itty-bitty narrow ladder, and people were trying to figure out, how do you go back down the ladder? I mean, we got up easily enough, but now I'm looking at this hole in the floor and this ladder, and I don't know how to negotiate it. And people are like, just turn around and walk forward down the ladder. Not my best move, and I don't know. I mean, women, I wear size 10, right? My shoes are big shoes. I have big feet, and the rungs are this big. And so, you know, I can hear people saying, ha, 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 she's got big feet. I don't know a lot of Spanish, but I knew they were making fun of my feet. And so I turned around, and I, you know, ducked my head as I came down, hid my face from them. Lots of laughter, lots of getting to know each other on our trip. We continued walking all over the place. Once we left here, we went across the road, and I didn't even see the path, right? But you start walking, and you realize you're kind of on like a little cow path, and we're just walking through. Watch where you step. Learned that phrase very quickly. And as we were walking through, just the views, we keep going up and up and up, and it's just gorgeous. We're at about 9,200 feet above sea level. So it's hard to tell the people that you're with, you know what, there's not as much oxygen here as there is where I live. Like, I need to stop and take a break, folks. Stop going uphill for a second, which there's no downhill from here. So we're up in the mountains, and it's tiring walking, and they keep telling us, walking is good for you. Is it? Not here. Flat. I like flat. It took us a while to get to where we were going, but it was this beautiful, they kept saying, we're going to take you to this overlook. And so it was just gorgeous. Looking out over the land, seeing all the different houses, you know, sprinkled around, seeing the different animals on the far hills, and we took tons of pictures on this trip. So we get up the hill, we're on this little narrow path, and you can see how it's kind of at a slope there. They stop on the path and go, now we're going this way, and they point upwards, and we just go, up this really steep, you know, dig in the final bit here. They get us up there. They waited on me to join them. And we sat down on this hillside. And Alberto wanted to talk to us about the history of the place. And Alberto took his time and was careful with what he said. But he started with, do you know the word conquistador? And we were all like, yeah, we heard that like in grade school, right? The Spanish came in to South America. The conquistadors arrived, and they were after gold. And he said, yeah, you know, that's a really bad word around here. He said, we don't use the word conquest lightly either. Like, conquest is a bad word. He said, I know, like, when you see a girl, the guys might be, there's my next conquest. That's not funny. You wouldn't say that if you knew what that word really meant. So they, in the 1500s, had a really rough patch. And you got to think about it as our Native Americans, where they were here, and, you know, we've heard the stories, and we don't know how to handle those stories all the time of, you know, the Europeans came in, and we just kind of marched across the land, and they had less and less space for the Native people. Same thing in Colombia, same thing here. So he's telling the stories of the 1500s and how that went on through the 1600s, the 1700s, and into the 1800s. And it was brutal for them. The Misak had to flee, and the Spanish took everything that was great, you know. They would look at things and say, we want this land, and so the Misak would go, we'll be over here, right? And they ended up in the mountains because that's not where they wanted to be, that's where they had to be. In 1820-ish, right around there, is when Colombia became Colombia, and the Spanish left. That's when they had their war and claimed their freedom. When a leader leaves, right, everybody kind of clambers for the top, and civil war broke out. So that was the 1840s for them. Once that settled, the rich people won. Surprise, right? And the rich people come in. It's kind of like an oligarchy where I have a huge, big house. I now lay it here, and I lay claim to all this space. This is all my land now, and you all work for me. You can't leave. I'm going to make sure you stay because I need workers. And it's kind of an ugly life where you have these indentured servants. Not really slaves, but to hear Alberto talk, it's not really, it's not far to understand that. That's kind of where it was going. And it was rough, mid-1800s into the 1900s. And the Misak that were up in the hills, very small in number. At some point, Misak had about 80 people that were free in the hills. The rest of them were these indentured servants. They were trapped. And so as Alberto's talking, he starts to talk about the 1980s. You talk about the 1500s to me, the 1800s to me, okay, that's forever ago. But the 1980s, I graduated high school in 1989. You know, it's like, that was really recent. I'm young. You know, it's that idea of, holy cow, that's not very long ago. His mom, Alberto's mom, lived as a servant on one of these lands. And the Misak, even though they were growing in numbers in the hills, would secretly meet with the Misak growing and living in this slavery kind of situation. And they finally decided in the 80s to rise up against the landlords. And so in the history of Colombia, you don't hear about Misak much. Like, I did a search. There's not a whole lot of Misak history out there. You hear more broad terms. The farmers rose up against the landowners. The farmers were these people who were stuck farming. They weren't farmers because they wanted to be. And so that happened in the 80s. The 80s were volatile. The U.S. was involved in those conflicts. And you can talk about the drug lords and everything, but they were the oligarchs. You know, what you raised on that land sometimes was pretty questionable, right? And they fought for more land. So they were fighting amongst themselves as landowners. Then the farmers rise up, and they gained their freedom, and they pulled as many Misak out of there as possible. And it wasn't until the early 1990s, so only 30 years ago, did the Misak Nation get their land and get government approval to call this their space. They call it a reservation still, but they have their own council, they can set their own laws, and it's government approved. 30 years. So as I'm thinking about this, and I'm seeing all of the land and all the things I have thought was beautiful, now I'm seeing it a little differently. That's not the land they wanted. It's the land they had to claim. It's not easy to farm there. It's where it's difficult to farm. It's difficult to build. It's difficult where you build because you got to get near the water and you've got to, you know, there's a lot of planning that has to be done. Not everywhere is easy to build. It's hard land. So Alberto's talking about the history. He's talking about it, and it's raw in him. Like, you can feel it. This is a hard thing for him to share. And he pauses, and he says, I want you to know that I forgive you. What? What did I do? Now, Misak have this word for Misak people and this word for everyone else. And I am other. And the others came in and brutalized them hundreds of years ago. And they have been fighting ever since. And they just now recently have a land that is theirs. And it's not easy. There's a lot of anger under the surface that I had not seen yet. And he stopped and looked at the five gringos on the hillside and said, you represent that to me, but I am letting go of it. He had tears running down his face. And Lauren looked at us and said, this would be a good time for you guys to respond. How do you speak for all of history in a moment like that and do any justice to it? It was huge for him to do this. And he has all his friends kind of sitting around us also listening. Like, it's not just him. It's now we are representing something to the people who are representing the Misak people and their history. Leslie and Travis both spoke, and they did a beautiful job accepting that forgiveness of saying, it was wrong. We see the pain that that has caused you. We validate that that is something that is so raw in you and so recent to you. And also, let's put a stake in the ground. Let's put that history in the past between us. It's history. We accept it. We acknowledge it. But we are brothers and sisters, and we want to move forward with you. We want to walk alongside you, and we want to heal that. It was just a beautiful moment on that side. And it's, you know, what is God saying to you, and what are you going to do about it? I don't know if there's anything left for me to do, but I am more aware of that kind of underlying pain. Like, that broadsided me. I was ignorant to the fact that that kind of anger and pain could be right there and me be blind to it. Learned a ton from Alberto. That night, we worshiped with them. It was a beautiful service in multiple languages. And they asked Lance to speak, kind of on the fly. Hey, Lance, can you speak tonight? And he's like, yeah, I'll speak. Lance is the director of the region. He's always got things to say. But he spoke from Jeremiah 29. And Brian's been sending out the devotions. And so the last couple days, you've been getting snippets of the scripture that Lance used, because it really jumped out to me as well. This service, he is speaking there. Laura is doing her best to translate on the fly as well without any kind of script. I love their worship service. We need an accordion. Who knew? Every time they played music, an accordion was there and some kind of a drum was there. And then you were lucky if you got some guitars or a little bit of keyboard with it. But we sang together and we worshiped together, and it was beautiful. And it was more meaningful. If we had had the church service first and then heard Alberto, I think we would have really missed out on something. That scripture from Jeremiah is written to Christians in exile. And I'm not going to read it all to you. We've got it on a slide here. I've got the last bit bolded for you so you can kind of see what's jumping out at me there. But it's that idea that this is not your land, and you've been removed from your land to another place that maybe you're not comfortable with yet, and maybe you just want to go back home. But stop and think for a second. You need to thrive there. Stop wishing you were somewhere else. Build. Plant your gardens. Do a harvest. Have kids. Let them marry. Have them grow there. Think long term. Thrive there. Pray for that land. Because if you pray for it and it prospers, you will prosper. Makes me think about my own setting. Am I doing those things well, even where I am? I'm not in exile. But when you come away from that Kairos moment and you're thinking about it, what's God asking me to do? Hey, Danelle, you could be doing more to thrive where you're at. I mean, that's kind of what I'm hearing. Are you doing everything you can for your community? Crossroads is fantastic. I mean, you guys, I see pictures on Facebook of, you know, working at the pantry. I don't even know that it's happening. I don't know how you're assembling these teams to go do stuff, but people are being led to do things. And it's not through the church. It's because people are listening to God and doing something about it. And you're coming alongside people in the community, and you're helping people to thrive. That's beautiful. And so we get the sense that God is speaking not just through the people up front, but through individuals. And I hope you're hearing those Kairos moments. I hope you're getting those ideas and that vision from those moments when God is, you know, burning your heart with something. And you're thinking about it and wondering about your next steps. What do I do with this information here? The Kairos moments are for all of us. We have to believe that God is speaking to each of us. And so that was something that when I got down there and got to Columbia, I could look out and, like, there were places where there were trash. And I was thinking, they need a trash program. Like, someone should be taking care of this. And then we asked, what's the vision for your community? And the answer was literacy. And I'm like, I'm worried about the trash on the ground. They're worried that their children can read and learn about the Bible and have the right materials to learn and grow in Christ. Oh, I need to set myself aside in my thoughts. in my very new, you know, I just walked into your community and I have ideas. No, that's not how that works. God speaks to each one of us, including people in the far reaches. And I knew that, but I didn't know that. That was driven home for me. When we did our journaling at the end, Lauren said, I want you guys to come up with one word. What's the one word that God has given you that you're really taking away? And my one word, when I settled on it, was vision. Where there is no vision, the people perish. And I went down there, and they are not perishing. There are plenty of people with vision there. There are lots of projects, people with ideas, and a hope for the future, and a love for the people around them. It's just beautiful. But there were a lot of words on my list. And all of them came out of these moments. And they've been churning inside me. And that's why I'm still processing. That's why, you know, I don't have all my answers yet. Because there's so much, and there's so much richness and learning to be done when you're visiting with someone that's totally different from you, in a place that's totally unfamiliar to you. And your main job while you're there is to listen and learn. I ended up writing down some questions. These are the things that are like churning with me. You know, God is saying, what are you doing to thrive in your community, Danelle? What are you doing? And some of the questions, I've got them on the next slide. There are three of them that are kind of standing out to me. These are the things I need to be asking myself. And I think they're translatable to anyone and everyone. What part of yourself is getting in the way? Laura was the projects manager, right? The detail person. That's my job in real life. That's what I do. Detail, 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 puzzle, 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 puzzle. Put it all together. I love that stuff. And I had to set all of that aside. Just listen and learn, Danelle. That's all you're doing. We don't need your ideas today. We don't need your problem solving today. My introvert self. Set that aside. You're an extrovert this week. Who needs me to listen? Who needs me to trust them? And who out there in my little world is invisible to me right now? They need to be seen. There is something about being alongside someone and really seeing them that is good. You want to be seen. And there's a lot of people that don't feel seen. And I need to be more conscious of that. I think we all need to be more conscious of that. Who needs to be seen in our world? So my process for coming alongside people is developing. But the first one on my list is you have to have a friend take you there. I can't just go in and insert myself into a situation. I need to make sure I'm forming a relationship and I'm thinking long term. I need to make sure that as I'm coming alongside, that I'm listening first and I'm trusting that God speaks into the hearts of the people that I'm with. That they have vision. And before I come alongside, I have to listen and learn a ton before I insert myself into their journey. Maybe it becomes part of my journey, but I don't own it. And I think that's where we are called as Christians to be a lot of time, the visitor that comes alongside, that walks someone else's journey with them, that is a help. And a friend, and a companion, because those are not easy journeys that people are taking right now. Let's pray. Father, I thank you for today. I thank you for my trip. I thank you that you are still working on me, and you are still talking to me about this trip. Lord, I hope and pray that as I talk to individuals and the whole congregation, that there is something there that you have put in me that resonates with them, and that they can take it with them. That they can ask, what is God saying to me in this moment? And what am I going to do about it? Lord, it takes action. And I just pray that you would be in those actions. You would be present enough that we know that we need to follow your footsteps, that we can see them right in front of us, and we know which way we need to go. Because following you is the number one thing. We need to get ourselves out of the way and let you be the guide. Lord, I thank you for the promise that you are with us and that you will speak to us.